That's Les Norman's music. That means Les Norman is hanging out with us. He is in studio here with us for the hour. Les Norman, Breaking the Norm, presented by TruckMovers.com, First Federal Bank of Kansas City, and HMH Auto Sport. Mention Sports Radio 810. You get 10% off your service bill. Les Norman hanging out with us here. Les, what's up, man?
My
How are you?
Dudes, what is happening?
Not much. Royals are happening. Big day yesterday. Hey. Big win for the Royals yesterday.
Hashtag Vinny P.
That's right. Hashtag.
How long have I been belaboring this point?
I know. We've been excited to see it happen.
Yes.
You know, this apropos of really nothing of what I was really going to bring up, but now I'm just curious. Like, you know, you say hashtag Vinny P, but it could be hashtag Italian breakfast. Do you think that sticks? The Italian breakfast? He doesn't like it.
No, it's just, it's too similar to the country breakfast.
Like,
I mean, you got to.
We're trying to recreate something there.
And let it happen organically.
Yeah.
What is an Italian breakfast?
Salami?
I don't know. I mean, I know what a country breakfast is. It's
lasagna with eggs.
And maybe I just don't know. Is Vinny actually from Italy, or is his family heritage just Italian?
I mean, I don't think he's like from Italy. I don't think so either. Born in the United States.
Yeah, I think that's people trying too hard.
I'm sure somewhere there's some. Vinny Pasquantino.
It's Italian heritage. Yes, I'm just curious.
He is from Richmond, Virginia.
Yeah, like if he were from Italy,
the home of
sense.
Italians. Richmond, Virginia.
You know it.
Yep.
If he were truly Italian, like Kobe Bean Bryant, then, you know.
That's exactly right. Yes.
I could text my mother-in-law.
One of these players is from Virginia. This other player is from France. Kobe Bryant and Vinny Pasquantino.
I thought Kobe was born in Italy.
Italy, whatever it was. Italy. That's what I meant. Not France, Italy. Vinny Pasquantino. No, he's from Richmond, Virginia. There you go. And he went to Old Dominion. But he will be making his major league debut tonight. Yeah, I'm not a fan of the Italian breakfast either. I think it's just trying too hard to recreate the Billy Butler thing.
Yeah, just let him let it happen, man. Just let it happen.
Yeah, that's right. So I said yesterday it's a win for the Royals yesterday. Yes?
Real quick before all the texts start coming in, Kobe was born in Philly. Went over to Italy.
Okay. Was he born in Philly?
He was born in Philly. So
West Philadelphia.
Start coming.
Born and raised.
So he could have been president.
Could have. Yes.
Okay.
Can't now.
Yes, that is true. But had he been born, different country. Just going by the rules. So it was a win yesterday for the Royals. They trade Carlos Santana. They bring up Vinny Pasquantino, and Jackson Kowar looks good.
Yeah.
I don't care about the score. I don't care about the 10-4 score at all.
When you said Royals win, I knew there had to be something deeper.
No, yesterday was a win for the Royals. Honestly, in this season, that's one of the bigger wins they've had. Yesterday, as Pasquantino called up Carlos Santana, they got something for him.
Mm-hmm.
And Kowar didn't just get shelled and look like he doesn't belong.
Yeah. I was late to social media yesterday. I had a lot of work to catch up on. Was in St. Louis with my son in a baseball tournament. And first thing I saw, the Royals trade Carlos Santana, and then I knew.
You knew it.
Finally, I knew that Vinny P was on his way up. Yeah, it's exciting, man. We've been talking about it for weeks on here, and thought about it should happen a couple months ago. So yeah, and the thing that is amazing to me is that I think JJ Piccolo said that it just came about this past weekend. Do I find that hard to believe? I mean, I'm just glad he's here. Let's just say that. But has that really not been in the works? That's confusing.
I mean, I think it's probably been in the works where they've wanted to get him somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But Ty France getting hurt was probably a big part of why this team, maybe it just came together with this team.
Right.
But 29 other teams knew Carlos Santana is available if you need somebody.
If you can get a team that is eager, and I know the Royals are still going to probably pay the majority of what's left. Like, what is it, a little over 4 or 5 million left, maybe?
Yeah, because it was, I mean.
It's close to five.
Yeah, it was 10 this year. So
10-3 or 10-5 or something,
Yeah, they've still got more than half the season. So
yeah, but I still think the Royals are going to pay the most of the remainder of that, but it's great to find a team that was willing to take him and actually believe they need him. That's the amazing thing.
Well, I mean, they...
And he has been pretty decent lately.
Well, I think the thing about what the Mariners were looking for is, you know, Ty France goes down. He's one of the most valuable first basemen that, playing this year. They're 7.5 out.
they still have, you know, postseason aspirations, but they don't want to sell off guys that might be real value that could come up right. and help them to then bridge the gap between now and when Ty France comes back. Yeah. So can you
they need
trade
a veteran
guys?
They need a veteran that knows what he's doing and can handle it. And he has been swinging the bat well lately, like the old Santana. So, I mean, yeah, it's a good fit. I mean, all jokes aside, forget the batting average and all that. It's a good fit for Seattle. It was good timing, and it opened the door, finally, to get Vinny P here. So that's good.
Yeah, absolutely. And I talked about in the first part of the show that I think the Royals, you know, got it right.
Yeah.
And there may have been some luck that played along with that, but there's got to be luck in a lot of different, you know, aspects of life. And I think maybe part of the strategy was hope. So while they were keeping Vinny Pasquantino down in AAA and what we had talked about, we looked at the at-bats and plate appearances for Bobby Witt and MJ Melendez, comparing that to Vinny Pasquantino, and he was right around what they were at. So you're like, man, it's getting close to where he's getting to that threshold of when they say, we want these guys to get seasoned down in AAA. That gap between AAA and the majors has never been bigger than it is now. And so while he was getting a certain number of plate appearances at bats down in the minors, they weren't ready to call him up while hoping that while Vinny Pasquantino does that, Carlos Santana can start to hit the ball, get hot, and then it might come together where they can move him and then clear the way for Vinny Pasquantino. It worked out.
Yeah. Timing was perfect.
Yeah. They could have DFA'd Carlos Santana in May. Or, you know, early June, because, you know, one of the reasons why I say that, you know, I'll give the Royals credit on this one that they got it right is because sitting there on June 1st, this is what the Royals were staring at and the entire city calling for Pasquantino and for you to get rid of Carlos Santana. And they waited 26, 27 more days to do that. But Vinny Pasquantino in the month of May alone, in 26 games in the month of May alone, he OPS'd at 1.197 with 9 doubles, 12 home runs, and 35 RBIs in 26 games. Carlos Santana, the entire season, through May, so entering June 1st, he was OPS'ing at 5.28 with 5 doubles, 2 home runs, and 10 RBIs.
So what are you saying?
What I'm saying is that's what they were looking at.
Right.
They were looking at this guy who was just mashing, who, by the way, had mashed every level in the minors that he has played at.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just out of nowhere. This guy was like, well, we got to move him up to AAA because he's 25. And what's he going to do down in AA?
That's never had failure.
He has mashed every single level he's been at.
Mm-hmm.
And he was doing it yet again. And the guy has just shown that he's going to continue to hit and continue to hit. And Carlos Santana at the big leagues was not hitting. And fans were booing. And they were asking for people to be fired. A lot of it frustration with a simple move of DFA Santana and bring up Pasquantino.
Right.
So I'll give credit where credit is due, because in the grand scheme of things, 3 weeks is not that big of a deal for a player to be down in the minors. They didn't keep him down all year. I would have liked to see him up June 1st or early on. He comes up June 27th, makes his major league debut June 28th. In 2024, we'll be looking back and going, it's 3 weeks.
Yeah.
3.5 weeks, not that big of a deal. And we'll see if they get anything out of these two guys at all.
It's interesting, too, that the Brewers DFA'd Lorenzo Cain, and they're going to be in it. And so you wonder, are the Royals going to follow suit now? Did that give the Royals permission to do that to Santana? But they hung in there, trying to get him hot. And granted, even Santana was at least, the average may have been a little bit below Cain's at the time. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but maybe they were giving him a chance to still try to hang in there. And he did get a little hot for Santana. He did get some production there. And
he was really good in June.
Yeah, we got a couple pitchers out of it. Mm-hmm. So it's so easy. And I've slowly become a part of the fickle fan base. You know, understanding the game on that level, understanding how things work, and yet I still want what I want. I'm impatient, and you know me. I've got an affinity for these younger guys that do well in the minor leagues, and the organizations drag their feet. I'm always going to be the guy, call that guy up. I mean, I was writing in and listening today to you guys playing the different clips of him, his dad not believing him, and his girlfriend, and taking out the trash and doing all those things. I was not taking out the trash when I found out, but but still, those are great memories. And so, yeah, call those guys up, create those memories. Someone's going to do well. You're going to hit it right on the nose, and someone's going to get hot, and it's going to be really cool. So, but hey, you know, regardless of our fans' impatience, they waited, and they got a couple pitchers out of them, and Vinny got to come up, so it worked out.
You didn't have a trash bag in your hand when you found out you were heading to the major leagues?
Dude, I was literally taking my uniform pants off, getting ready to take a shower after the game. I think I shared that, and Jersh called me in, and that was that whole thing. They set me up and acted like I was in trouble when I wasn't, and I mean, I was hitting really well at the time. Yeah. I think
because you were like supposed to like bunt or they said you missed.
He said it was a hit and run. We were up like 10 runs in the seventh inning. There's no way he would have done it. Jersh is too good of a manager and too good of a baseball guy. He would have never shown up another team, even if we had just brawled the night before. And Bob Hegman was in town, and Joe Jones was in town, and Duke was in town, and a lot of the brass was in town. And so they just messed with me. But no, it was literally right after a game. We'd played the game. So
who were the first people you called?
I knew you were going to ask me that today. I called my family, called my parents. They were excited, and they absolutely believed me because they they couldn't wait to get off the phone and tell all their friends, and they were super excited. But right after that, I called my high school baseball coach.
Oh, nice.
Who, a few years back, he retired with, like, Illinois, like, over 800 high school wins. I mean, it's crazy how many wins he had. Two state championships at a really small school. But he was, during the transition of mom and bio dad and all that stuff, and then a divorce, you know, I spent a lot of my high school years really struggling emotionally. And he was the guy that wasn't just the baseball coach. He was the father figure. He was the guy that challenged me. He was the guy that didn't let me get away with anything when I started. If I was going to start a fight in PE class or something like that, I was always lashing out. And he's the guy that kept me under control. So it wasn't just my baseball coach in Jerry Kogel that I called. It was my mentor. It was my father figure. It was sometimes my babysitter. It was the guy that basically kept me out of detention and maybe out of the police station at the time. Who knows?
Wow.
But yeah, so I called him right after, and then I called my college coaches, and then I don't even know if I called anybody after that. It was just time to... And the thing I like about, and I'll end with this, the thing I like that what Vinny talked about was there was that moment that he needed to get by himself.
Yeah.
And when I got back to the hotel... I think I had some friends in town visiting. I told them, guys, I'm so glad you came in town, but I got to pack. I got to get ready. And so they just kind of hung out, and I just sat and cried my eyes out. Because, again, that's when I'm 6 years old, that's what I said I wanted to do. When I'm 12 years old, it's what I wanted to do. It's why I quit college football after getting my brains beat in after my freshman year. It wasn't because I was getting my brains beat in. I knew I would have had to work to get better, and I still liked football. But I wanted to be a major league player, and seeing guys get called up and just that dream, and watching, you know, you watch the big league outfielders. You watch, even though it's your organization, you watch how those guys playing your position are doing. Yeah. And you don't want people to fail, but yet, why did you get into pro ball? You want to play in the big leagues. It's the dream. And so I just got quiet for about a half hour, and it wasn't just like teary-eyed whimpering. I mean, it was bury your face in your pillow.
Wow.
And sob, cry, like, I can't believe this is finally happening. And then the next day, it's the whole real world sets in.
So I thought it was, I think it's kind of cool, like yesterday with Vinny, because yesterday is all about Vinny. He kind of has his day, whereas Bobby Witt Jr., we all knew he was going to make the roster coming out of spring training.
Completely different.
Making the opening day roster, and it's the excitement about everybody and the whole team coming back. Did you think you were going to make the big league club out of spring training in 95, or did you expect to be sent to the minors to where you would then have a call-up? Do you remember?
I knew I'd be sent to the minors because they kind of made it clear that you need maybe a little more seasoning because, you know, 94 was a different year. And in 94, I was one of the first guys that got to AAA, like before Randa and before Vidiello and all those guys. I fast-tracked it because once I got my full season in A-ball and was hitting 400 and skipped high A, went to double A, was a minor league player of the year in 93 and was an all-star MVP in 93 in the AA All-Star game. All those great things were happening. So I think they kind of fast-tracked me to get there. And then in 94 in AAA, I started and struggled mightily. I mean, I'd not seen curveballs like that. It was the jump from me to AA to AAA was the most difficult. Didn't have the AA issue. And so, it was in 94 going into 95, you're not making this club, get some experience. 95 was my first big league camp. So just get a taste of it and then go back down and now earn it. So getting called up that May 29th or 30th in 95 was a big deal because it was unexpected. Now I was doing really well in AAA. But it wasn't until 96 that, okay, you got a couple months in the big leagues. Now you know what it's like. Then I expected that I needed to work but had a chance to make the club.
It just feels like it's a cooler story if it's with your minor league teammates and you're actually getting the call up as opposed to just breaking camp with a big league club. And I know either way you're getting to the big leagues.
And you're right.
But I kind of love that Vinny like had his day.
Yeah.
Like Bobby, and I know they shared some stuff about, you know, with Whit Merrifield and them, like, you know, giving him the business and messing with him when he got told, but he knew. Everybody had, it was the worst kept secret in town that Bobby Witt Jr. was going to break camp with the big league club.
We all knew.
Vinny, like, he's sitting there like, what day is this call going to actually come? And there's just kind of like a romanticized version of that story in my mind of the minor leaguer getting the call and having that where he doesn't know it's coming, that I think is pretty cool for Vinny to have that story for the rest of his life.
I love the way Bobby Witt Jr. plays. I think he's a great kid because we got to hear him speak. He came and I think I'd shared that him and Prado came to fantasy camp two times ago. And shared with the fantasy campers, or maybe it was right when he signed, either one. But again, you knew, like you just said, you knew after this spring how well he was doing.
Yeah.
It was like, what, 98% chance he's probably, or whatever you want to put on it.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't like that with Vinny P. We were just kind of being introduced in spring training a little bit to Vinny P. And then he swung the bat well. I go, oh, who's this dude? And then AAA the whole year. So I love watching them both play, and I will still, even if the Royals don't win a game, I'll still watch almost, whether it's live or replay, I'll watch every one of Bobby Witt Jr.'s at-bats and follow him and see the great things he does. But to be honest with you, I'm more interested in Vinny P because this is a story that's, as you watch him, the story is being written. We can kind of foreshadow, if he stays healthy, what Bobby Witt Jr. is going to do.
He's going to be a star.
He's going to be a stud his whole life. He's going to earn it. He's going to be a great dude. He's going to make hundreds of millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. But Vinny P is really the blue-collar type one to watch.
Let's play that clip that you were talking about when he was asked what the coolest moment for him was after, you know, not necessarily getting the call, but, you know, seeing the coaches in the hallway while holding a bag of trash and then saying his whole body went numb when that happened. But what was the coolest moment for him after he found out he was going to the show?
The coolest thing, like in terms of my emotions, which I proudly wear on my sleeve, the coolest moment for me today was I was able to be in my apartment by myself for a little bit after I was told, as I was waiting for my clothes to dry. And it was just kind of one of those moments where I sat there and just kind of had a moment with myself. And that was a really cool thing because, you know how this game is. There's people all around all the time. And that was a moment where I could really just kind of be with myself. And that was just a really cool thing for me because, you know, you don't often get those moments. And I was able to kind of take it in.
Which is awesome. And exactly what you're talking about, Les. Yeah. And most people usually sit alone with their thoughts while their clothes are drying. Like, just, you know, let me just take it all in.
Yeah.
Just sit here, no noise, kids away, not having to make phone calls, and just let these clothes dry.
Well, and if you think about, like, you spend so much of your life, like, doing stuff to, at least I can speak for myself. I can't speak for everybody. Like, so much of my life I spent doing things trying to make my dad proud.
Yeah.
You know, like I always wanted to try to impress my dad, make my dad proud. And you do things for your coaches or for your teachers or for you're always trying to do things to make other people. So like to have that moment where he gets to sit and just like be proud of himself,
mm-hmm.
like where you're not making all the phone calls, like he talks about having to make all the calls on his drive and having to call everybody and talk to everybody and talk to his teammates and all of that, where you're like, yeah, I'm glad all these other people are proud of me or whatever, to like to sit down and reflect on like what you've accomplished and to be proud of yourself for just
Yeah.
Because yesterday was a whirlwind for him. But to have that, like, it's, I'm glad that he had that. And I just think that kind of stuff is really cool to hear somebody talk about it and express it that way.
You guys have daughters, right? Both of you?
Yes.
Okay. So I don't have daughters, but a lot of my friends have daughters of varying ages. You know, I've got a friend that has a 3-year-old daughter and a 6-year-old daughter and a 13-year-old daughter and a 17-year-old daughter. Uh-huh. Oh, and a 20-year-old son. So I get to see it from this side of it, and all of them say, you know, their daughters when they're little, I just want to be my daddy's princess. You know, I just want to know that I'm beautiful, know that I'm loved. And, you know, for me, it was really special because, again, my dad hightailed it at 12 and I never saw him again. And so there's that whole thing there. So I spent my whole life with all my coaches and mentors in my life with the question that I never verbalized but always had in my heart and in my mind, am I enough? Mm-hmm. Am I good enough? Mm-hmm. And even when you come from a great family that you have, both families are there, or both parents are there, and you've got a great relationship with your dad. And it, like, you know, Vinny, his dad didn't believe him, and that was a great funny moment there between the two of them, and they'll always have that. I guarantee you, even no matter what your family history is, when Vinny sat in those moments, whether he realized it or not, there was that one moment that he said, you know what, I earned it, and I'm good enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now, you know, he'll get a chance to play.
And no matter tonight, what he does,
yeah,
he's good enough.
Yeah, because no matter what he does, he made
Major League Baseball player.
That's right. He played in major leagues, which, you know, 0.00001% of people that have played baseball have ever made it to that level, Norman being one of those guys.
That still blows me away. It's a blessing, man. I'm so blessed.
Yeah. And you know what? But you worked. You worked your tail off, man. You worked your butt off. You continue to do that. We love having you in here for a lot of different reasons, but the stories and
Perspective. It's about Vinny.
You know, it's about Vinny, but it's about a lot of different things. It's about a lot of perspectives when, you know, you hear different stories. Jamie Bloomer this morning talking about and you know, telling his story and how, you know, the first day in major leagues for him, he milked a cow, you know.
Yeah.
Did you milk a cow?
I did not. Okay, well. I know that story very well. And let me add this, a Jamie Bloomer thing right here. You know, there are guys that come to the big leagues that are about themselves. There are guys that are about their team, but there are rare guys. And this is what Jamie Bloomer is. Jamie Bloomer, he was a talented player. We know that Jim, you know, Mike DePasquale, that commercial, I know everybody and everybody knows me. Mm-hmm. Jamie Bloom is the guy that knows everybody and everybody knows Jamie. But when Jamie was, I've got to play with him in AAA and in the big leagues. And Jamie Bloom was the guy that just with his sense of humor, with his encouragement, with his work ethic, he could go from being, hey, it's game time. It's professional. Let's go to work, joke around, encourage people. Jamie Bloom was the guy that made everybody around him better.
That's awesome.
And I love that as a teammate. And, you know, I think that the Royals have a team of guys that are like that. And I'm sure Vinny's going to be the same way.
Do you remember him milking the cow? Because you were there.
I don't think I was there.
I'm looking at your game log. And
really? I was there?
Yeah, you were there. His debut was August 9th.
Well, was it his debut or his first game in the big? I don't know that he made his debut that night, but
he said no. This morning he said he pitched that night.
He pitched that night, okay.
And he got into the cow milking contest before the game started.
So maybe
it was
I wasn't out
in Anaheim when they were the California Angels.
Okay, so I probably was there, but I don't think I might have been in the clubhouse during the time and didn't see that.
So you didn't play in that game. You played the next night.
Mm-hmm.
You played the day before and the day after, but you were obviously on the trip. Because you played at home against Oakland, and you played the next night at the Angels. So you had the night off that night, but Jamie Bloomer was milking a cow.
Again, against the Angels,
you
hit 400, so, you know, I need to get my day off. You know?
If you had the night off, why didn't you milk a cow?
It's probably because I knew he was milking the cow, and I wanted nothing to do with that, so I probably hid in the clubhouse.
It's like the kid in class when the teacher's going to ask for somebody to come up and be in front of the class. You're like, you know,
please don't call me.
Hiding
don't call
your
me.
Head don't. And doing anything but making eye contact. Les is like, I'm going to go hide in the bathroom. They're trying to pick out who's going to go and milk the cow for this random competition. You know what? The new guy. The guy at the bottom of the totem pole. The new guy. You know, you're going to have to go and milk that cow. Sorry, man.
If I would have had maybe even one more day in the big leagues at that moment than Jamie Bloomer, I guarantee you I would have said, dude, I've got more big league time. You go milk the cow.
So, that's right.
And if I...
Seniority, buddy.
There's something that tells me that I think a lot of the pitchers like Gubiza and those guys probably picked Bloomer to do it.
Maybe because they knew he would do it and he would give us the most entertainment value out of it. Yeah. See, he was a team guy.
Yeah. And apparently the cow kicked over the bucket, so he ended up losing. So
it's all right, man.
What are you going to do? Let's hear real quick before we take a break. Vinny Pasquantino. It's a question about how he chose number 9, but there's some a little funny story in here as well. But how did he get the number 9, which is what Vinny Pasquantino will be wearing tonight?
Davy called me this morning. In spring training, I wore 73, but Daniel Mengden is wearing 73 right now. And he called me this morning to just kind of get some logistical things out of the way. How to get here, I didn't know how to park or park here. I know how to park my car, but I'm saying.
The escape park itself,
I wish. That'd be unbelievable. So we were talking about that, and then he brought it up. He said, we've got you in number 9. So I've never worn 9 before, which I think is kind of cool, but I used to always want to wear numbers and multiples of 3s, and 3 times 3 is 9. So that's the way I'm looking at it, which I think is pretty cool. Except I tried to draw a 9 earlier and I was really bad at it. So on my signature, I put my name and my number. I need to work on my 9s a little bit, but I'm excited to wear number 9.
He wears multiples of 3s and, like, you know, just, hey, here's how you got number 9. Cool story. My favorite part of the story is that, you know, I didn't know how to park. Well, I knew how to park. I know how to park, but I didn't know, like, where and how to park at Kauffman, which is great. I like him already. Like, even throwing that little thing in there of, like, well, you know, I'm trying to get here and I didn't know how to park. I mean, obviously, I know how to park, but that was great. But those are the things that, you know, you don't really think of when, like, he's driving down from Omaha to Kansas City. And then getting there and, like, I don't know where I'm supposed to go. Like, what do I do? And I'm just curious, like, and we'll take a break and we'll talk about some other things. But when do you think his head will stop spinning? Like,
what
is it tonight?
What month is this?
I mean, is it tonight when he gets in the box or is it a week from now? Because obviously it makes sense that they didn't put him in the lineup last night. Hearing the stories and what yesterday was like and getting down there and arriving like 2.5-3 hours before the game even started. Like, that makes sense. All right, just get acclimated a little bit. But when do you think it finally just the whirlwind?
He's going to need about a week or so. I mean, he'll lock in. You got to get the first at bat out of the way. And I'm sure that when you're going well, and I remember that point in AAA when I knew I was coming up hitting 360, if a guy was throwing 98, your timing is so good. You're seeing the ball so well that it seems like it's 78. I get to the big leagues and actually face a guy named Terry Burrows throwing 78, and it looks like it's 98. So you need that game and that first at-bat to get out of the way. So probably within the series or maybe when they go on the road, he'll start to come down. But I'm thinking of a possible good nickname for him if he's wearing number 9. You know, if he starts hitting the ball well and gets off to a hot start, they may start calling him Roy Hobbs. Wore number 9. Mm-hmm. Or the Natural.
Kind of feel like Bobby Witt's the Natural.
I agree. Like, we're talking about the number, though.
I know, but if feel like there's going to be a nickname of the Natural, it'd have to be Bobby Witt, because he just looks like he was...
Just throwing it out there, man.
He was kissed by the baseball god. Bobby Witt was, man. There's no doubt. Whoever the baseball god is that was building a baseball player was building it, and then this mold came into real life, and it was Bobby Witt. Like, could the body be. Type, the swing, the athleticism, the fielding, the arm... It's ridiculous what he offers. Hopefully, Vinny Pasquantino has some of that as well. Certainly at the plate, they think he can do that. What was it that somebody described his bat as he tracks the baseball like a heat-seeking missile? Like, the bat just simply is attracted to the ball the way that you see missiles and things like that. Like, it's an interesting way of describing it, that, you know, his walk rate and understanding where the ball is going to be. And when he swings, he's making contact because he's that good. We'll see. Hopefully all of those compliments and scouting reports and success that precedes him will then translate to the big leagues, and we'll find out tonight. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. A number of other things I want to get into with Les Norman from Breaking the Norm, presented by TruckMovers.com, First Federal Bank of Kansas City, and HMH Autosport. Mention Sports Radio 810 to get 10% off your service bill. Another win last night for the Royals, not on the field, but Jackson Kowar looked like he belonged. We'll talk about that, what maybe is different about Kowar, and could it click this go-around for him? We'll do that on the other side of the break. More Zone next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Turned out he went 20 minutes in his opening monologue. Like, come on, that's too long. You don't need to be talking for like 20 minutes in a monologue, guy. I mean, jeez Louise. Let somebody else have the mic a little bit.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Todd Liebel will be in studio with us coming up at 1 o'clock. Got an announcement. Some stuff to talk about in the 1 o'clock hour with Todd Liebel about the show.
Going to want to hear it.
Eh. Maybe you are, maybe you aren't. I don't know. It depends on your perspective once you hear it. I'm not sure. Les Norman presented by TruckMovers.com, First Federal Bank of Kansas City, HMH Autosport. Mention Sports Radio 810. You get 10% off your service bill. Les Norman here with us. Okay, so last night, Bubich struggled. He's pitched pretty well since he's got called back up. Last night was not the case. He didn't have his fastball. He couldn't locate it, and he gives up 5 earned runs, 7 runs overall, 3 walks, a couple of strikeouts, 9 hits, gets to 2 outs in the 5th inning, and ultimately pulled. It was a bad outing for Chris Bubich.
Yep.
He wasn't done many favors by his defense in the game either. Brad Keller on Saturday was not done many favors by his defense in that game. Jackson Kowar last night, though, goes out there and throws 3 1/3 innings, 2 hits, no earned runs, 3 walks, you'd like that to be fewer, but 5 strikeouts out of the 10 outs that he recorded in 62 pitches to go 3 1/3, maybe a little more pitch efficient. But again, those are, you know, really just picking nits from his outing last night when he's been pretty rough a number of times he's been up and pitched on the big league mound, and for what he did last night was pretty awesome. What did you see from Jackson Kowar? Do you think maybe there's something more there that, you know, as of late, he's been pretty awesome? He's had one outing in the minors where he gave up 9 earned runs and got hit around. Outside of that, he was throwing BBs, and he had, what, 57 strikeouts in the last 41 innings. So what did you see from Jackson Kowar? Do you have confidence that and some hope that maybe this can be the Jackson Kowar people were hoping he would be when he was in the minors and people talked about he might be the best of the bunch?
First thing I would say is give credit to the Royals for not giving up on the guy, because they did give him some chances. They did call him up. He absolutely self-destructed the last time or two he was in the big leagues, and so they stayed with him and gave him the confidence, go down, continue to work. We're behind you. We still believe in you. So that's part of it. But then the other thing, we were talking in the break, you know, I remember whether you're a pitcher, we were talking about Benny Case, you know, Kuderna, and then we were talking about just hitting in general. And when you stop thinking about your numbers, and if you look at your numbers, you know, Jamie Quirk used to always say, if you're worried about your numbers, then you've got something to worry about. And when he said it, I didn't know exactly what he meant, because maybe it's people don't think that you're mentally strong or you're humble or something like that. But later on, I realized that, look, there, if you're not injured, this game, everybody that's in the big leagues or even in AAA, you're talented enough to play at the big league level. The problem is does the game get surreal for you, or when your numbers aren't as good as they should be, can you be strong mentally? Can you bear that? But when you're worried, it is the biggest mental block. When you're struggling, or when you're worried about what might happen negatively, you're playing not to fail. And I feel like now you look at the Jackson Kowar that was getting lit like a Christmas tree and couldn't find the plate at times, to ironically last night in even just that one outing, but lately even in AAA, he looks like his facial expressions are different. He looks like he's relaxed. He looks like, oh, I need to throw this pitch and I need to hit that spot, and boom, he nails it. He just looks like a guy that is now completely relaxed. He's had the experience. He knows what it's like to get crushed and not do well. And so now he's finally opened the door to step into the potential that the Royals have seen in him all this time. So I saw him locating. I saw him pitching backwards. I saw him pitching forwards. And I saw him pitching confidently and attacking hitters. And we hadn't seen that in many of his outings, both in Kansas City or in Omaha.
So looking through Kowar and his game log in the minors, and the first 5 games that he went back down to the minors this year, he threw a total of 20 innings. He had 15 Ks and 8 walks in 20 innings and a 10.18 ERA. After that, the last 7 outings, he's got a 4.1 ERA. Mind you, 9 earned runs in 4 innings. So it does inflate some things. But again, he had that outing. But in 35 innings, he had 47 strikeouts and 15 walks, as opposed to the 15 strikeouts, 8 walks in only 20 innings. Alec Lewis has talked or wrote about it, and some others have discussed it as well, in that
when Kowar was sent back down, much like Brady Singer, when they said to Singer, throw the damn change up, you know, to Jackson Kowar, they said, look, your fastball is dropping. Okay, it's not staying on its plane, and it's not even having somewhat of a rise effect. It's dropping an inch or two, and that is going right into the swing plane of these guys, and they're hitting. That's not what used to be. So apparently, you know, his, you know, arm slot went from, you know, 12 to 1 o'clock to where in the big leagues, his one outing this year, he was pitching at almost 2 o'clock. So they were showing side by side that if you saw Jackson Kowar the first outing against Cleveland in the first game versus even last night, it's 2 o'clock versus almost 12. Mm-hmm. And what the Royals have said and what Alec Lewis was talking about and what some scouts had said is that by just doing that, now his fastball stays on the plane. You know, the shape of the fastball is much different. The changeup becomes much more effective when it's moving differently than what the fastball was moving. Mm-hmm. And the first five, six outings down in AAA, it was him trying to he was throwing differently. Yeah. He was throwing now with more over the top. And if you're a pitcher and you've been doing something for so long, now they're saying, we want you to pitch this way. It's going to take a while. And he was walking guys, wasn't striking many guys out. And then as he got more and more used to it, then you see 35 innings, 47 strikeouts, and doing some of those things. And then you see last night, 3 innings, 5 Ks. Mm-hmm. 3 walks, although a 3-2 pitch was pretty damn well placed at 98 on the black at the knees. It was called a ball, borderline, could have been a strike. It could have been 6 Ks and 2 walks. Instead, 5 Ks and 3 walks. That, to me, is what becomes encouraging. Now, we'll see. He's going to have to do it over and over again, you know, to prove that it's not just one fluky night that he went out there and pitched awesome in a game, and he hasn't really done that. But if they're saying they called him up because he's now repeating that delivery, he's now doing the things we wanted him to do, the results are showing, and the shape of the fastball is showing, and look at all the swing and misses he got on his changeup last night.
Look, when I travel, I don't want to fly on a brand-new airplane. I don't want to see a brand new airplane with the tag still on the wheels at the bottom waiting as I get on the jetway. I want the plane that's been up and has had experience and all that. He humbled himself and took a step back and said, okay, again, we just talked about it. Corey, we talked about that in the break. You stop thinking about the numbers. You have to take a step back and accept that, okay, when I've got a new arm slot, different arm angle, I'm going to walk some guys. I might get hit a little bit, but I've got to take the time to relearn this. And again, good on the Royals for spotting it, developing it, and giving him the opportunity to adjust to it. And then once it became repeatable, that's where that humility is. He's out of his own head now. He's trusting the process. And I fully expect it's not going to be a perfect outing every time. It's the big leagues. There are good hitters in the big leagues. However, I think you're going to see some more consistency with him, not just because of the new mechanical changes, but you got a guy that's confident. He's not stressed or worried. He knows he's got the organization's backing. So if he has a failed outing, they're not going to automatically jettison him back down to Omaha and we're going to put him in the corner with a dunce cap on. It's simply they have faith in him. They changed the process. They found out. And so now they can free him up again to step into that potential.
And I will also say that you know, we've obviously been very critical of the Royals and their pitching development throughout the years. And
I believe rightly so.
Absolutely. And
statistically, they've shown it.
Yeah, and of Cal Eldred at the big league level. So that has been well documented. And I'm not saying that, well, Cal Eldred now, you know, he's got to keep his job because of a couple of anecdotal things here and there. But if we're saying that the Royals finally got to the point to where I don't know why Brady Singer then went down and said, okay, now I'm going to really work on my changeup. Dayton Moore was on the show with us, and he told Brady Singer, you're not guaranteed to ever be back up in the big leagues. We don't know if we'll ever call you back up. Mm-hmm. Maybe that was Brady Singer finally saying, whoa, okay, it's not just going to be given to me, and I'm not just going to be entitled to this, that I got to actually go and work on the changeup.
Right. Your career was basically your signing bonus because we may not call you back up now.
Yeah, and if you're not going to do this, then, you know, hey, we'll find somebody that will. So he goes down and works on his changeup. So they knew that that had to happen, and whatever the grip, the feel, all of that, and maybe it was just simply finally driving it into the head of Brady Singer. With Jackson Kowar, it was noticing an issue with his release point and what arm slot he was pitching out of. And if that's the case and he goes down and fixes it and then is pitching well and gets back to doing what he was doing in the minors when he was, you know, striking everybody out and was just throwing BBs and just darts. And it was like, whoa, this guy's putting up just ridiculous K to walk, you know, ratio. And I can't wait to see him up in the big leagues. And then he gets just absolutely, you know, shelled.
Yeah.
If they do that and Coar comes up, and this is a big if that happens, and you would have two of the four pitchers that people have been talking about and talking about and talking about that the Royals developed, brought them up, they failed, figured some things out, had them go and work on something, brought them back up, and then they figured out and they're pitching well at the big leagues like Brady Singer is. And if Jackson Coar has maybe figured some things out, then I think there's part of the narrative that changes at that point. And maybe even with Cal Eldred, part of the narrative that changes of pitching development and noticing things and then having that pitcher go and do that. It's got to be repeatable, and it is not based on, one, Brady Singer's changeup, and two, 3 1/3 innings from Jackson Coar.
Non-leverage innings, by the way.
Absolutely. No, yeah. It's absolutely right.
You need to put him in that situation.
For sure. Yeah,
that
is the perfect spot
absolutely.
To put him back into.
Yep.
But as the progression comes, it was you want to see him start to get put into some leverage
absolutely.
Situations and
yeah.
how that translates when he feels like the game is on the line.
Right. So I want to know, who is the person or persons that discovered the change in Jackson Coar's arm slot?
It was Jason.
You did it, Jason?
Not
okay.
me.
So
I read
you
about
are
it.
Now the official minor league coordinator for pitching for the Kansas City Royals.
I read about it 3 weeks ago from Alec Lewis.
Yeah,
so, and because he wrote about it. So yeah. That's the first time I learned, because I'm looking yeah. at Jackson Coar when he goes down to AAA and I'm going, he's broken.
Yeah.
He is absolutely broken. And then I read that and I'm like, okay, let me take a step back. Mm-hmm. If that's really what's going on, I don't care about results. If he's changing or getting, whether it's changing or getting back to what he was doing, regardless, you know, I care about the process and I don't care about AAA results if he's doing what is going to be successful at the big leagues.
Right. This is not an indictment on Cal Eldred, nor is it okay, now everybody keeps their job because Jackson Coar mm-hmm. saved the organization.
Right.
Their reputation of not developing pitchers. But however they did it, if they haven't been doing that consistently, they need to be doing that consistently mm-hmm. because they may have saved his career. They may have saved this young man's psyche. Because I guarantee you, when a guy like Jackson Coar in the early minor leagues hadn't suffered failure, and then all of a sudden he goes up and, oh, you're fast-tracked, and then he wasn't just bad. He was
brutal.
Miserable, oh. brutal statistically. So they may have saved his psyche in baseball. They may have saved his career. And now he's going to most likely help them as he becomes the pitcher they thought. But however they processed finding that, whether it was videos or how far they went back or whatever process they go through, duplicate that process. So, and I'm not saying, okay, Bubich, yeah, he came back and pitched better. Last night it was, again, too many walks.
Mm-hmm.
And when he's over the plate, he's really over the plate right down the middle. And he can't get the ball down. So for him, it's consistency. But whatever they need to do, that's the process they need to do and to get out of this funk of not being able to develop these young studs.
Yeah, against Cleveland at the beginning of the season, 3 1/3 innings, 11 hits, 7 earned runs, 1 walk, 4 Ks. Last night, 3 1/3 innings, 2 hits, no runs, 3 walks, 5 Ks. Both of them in games where the Royals were pretty much out of it.
Well,
and so we'll see moving forward, but real quick, and you get what you were going to get, and I'm going to change the subject
yeah,
just a little bit.
Yeah, last thing. His first pitch, Jackson Coar's first pitch in the big leagues, you remember what it was? See if you can look it up on the video sometime.
Wow, yeah.
I think he like either worm burned it like 30 feet or like through like Lelouch hit the bull, win a stake kind of thing. I think, or at least his first, it might have been his first pitch or his first batter, but that's a microcosm of how Jackson Coar's approach was when he got to the big leagues, is pitching to not fail. And last night, he looked like he belonged.
You're looking it up. I mean, you? I'm looking it up, and it just says that it was a 1-0 count to Upton when he grounded out to a first. In the first at bat. So
okay. I think the first pitch.
So that first pitch could have been, you know, 50-foot breaking ball.
It was a ball.
I remember that. It was definitely a ball.
Yeah.
They might have made him go two balls on that or try to.
Well, here's the thing. Because after that, here's the rest of his inning. Walk, wild pitch, single. Walk, wild pitch, single. Wild pitch, ground out, single. Irvin Santana comes in for Jackson Coar.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't make it out of the first.
You've been pitching your whole life to that point in baseball. But all of a sudden, you're that bad and that wild. It's your head. It's all in your head.
Yep. But I wanted to change the subject to something else here real quick, and that is looking at last night and then comparing it to Brad Keller on Saturday when the Royals talk about the pitch to contact. You know, and we've had this conversation on the air as well about pitching to contact versus, you know, it's okay to go and get strikeouts too. What Daniel Lynch had talked about when it was like, okay, I don't know how much longer I have. Let me go after it. Then we find out that he's been battling a blister on his, you know, pitching hand, on his middle finger, the Jeremy Offelt. He's going through that. Hopefully he can get that figured out. But he was battling through that while, you know, he did have to actually battle when Shohei Ohtani's on the other side and on the mound. You know, he kept his team in the game, but it wasn't very efficient. Regardless, Brad Keller pitched to contact. Defense let him down. Fly balls into the outfield that should have been caught.
Yep.
We've talked about Heasley that pitched four innings and he had 21 pitches that he lost based on pop flies that were miscommunications and should have been caught.
Right, which affected his entire line.
Last night, Chris Bubich, a guy that pitches to contact, was let down by his defense as well. Bubich had, what was his line last night? Three walks, two Ks?
Mm-hmm.
Three walks, two of them came around to score. Jackson Kowar had three walks, nobody scored, he had five strikeouts. Half of the guys that he recorded an out with were by strikeout.
Mm-hmm.
Pitching to contact is fine, but every time the ball is put in play, there's a chance that it's going to fall. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be placed somewhere that, okay, well, even Brady Singer, the ball was put in play with Pache, and he got a glove on it, and it would have been the third out. And instead it bounces into right field, it's second and third, then a single comes up, and it's like there's two more extra runs, and Brady Singer could have had, you know, a complete game with two earned runs. Instead, he has five and eight and a third. Those things happen. But Brad Keller and Chris Bubich are pitch-to-contact guys, and they got hit around, and they had bad numbers because the defense did not help them out. And Jackson Kowar walked three last night and nary of a walk scored, and he had five strikeouts in the three innings. I'm thinking there's a correlation between those two.
There may be, but one thing you have to take into consideration is that Kowar and Lynch have swing and miss pitches.
Yeah.
Whereas Bubich can get strikeouts but doesn't have as good of a swing and miss pitch. And Keller the same way. He's got a good cutter, and he can get live. And we know when he throws a changeup, Brady Singer has good movement, and he can get strikeouts. I mean, didn't he have like a 9-strikeout performance a couple starts ago? So, but a changeup isn't prime. With smarter hitters, it's not always the swing-and-miss pitch, whereas Kowar's got a dirty slider. Lynch has a really dirty left-handed slider down into righties. And so, yes, I believe as a philosophy – pitching to contact shouldn't be the only thing that you do unless you just don't have your wipeout slider. We talked about Junis a few weeks ago. He's got a wipeout slider. Mm-hmm. Junis should never pitch to contact. He should set guys up. So it always depends on the pitcher to me in that.
Yeah. And again, it depending on the pitcher, certainly. But then drafting, developing guys that are swing and miss and soft contact guys as well. Les, you're the man. Appreciate it, sir. As always, there's Les Norman, Breaking the Norm, presented by TruckMovers.com, First Federal Bank of Kansas City, and HMH Autosport. Mention Sports Radio 810. You get 10% off your service bill. Appreciate it, man. Enjoy Top Gun tonight.
Oh, yes. I'm so excited. I haven't seen it yet.
You said you're excited you're going to see Top Gun tonight. I'm like, is that Vinny Pasquantino's nickname? Is it Top Gun?
Oh, see,
is that
there you go.
You call him Top Gun, huh?
I just may call him.
Is he Viper? Is he Jester?
His first big league home run on the night that I saw Top Gun.
That would be awesome.
That'd be awesome.
That'd be awesome. Appreciate it, sir. We'll take a time out, come back, wrap up this hour. Todd Lebo joining us in the 1 o'clock hour. More Zone next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
They've been firm up front.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, head to 810WHB.com. You can vote for the honorary ESPYs. The finalists are up there, so you can go and vote as to who you feel like is the most deserving. We've got male and female high school and college athletes of the year, high school coach, team of the year. We got the fan of the year as well, clutch performance of the year. The honorary ESPYs on Sports Radio 810WHB, brought to you by Google Fiber, Metcalf CarStar, and Office Products Alliance. That is 810WHB.com to go and vote for the honorary ESPYs, the finalists up there right now. So go and do that. 913-912-4810 is the text line. We'll talk with Todd Lebo on the other side of the break. He'll hang out with us. We got some fact or fiction And we do have some news about the show. We will do that on the other side of the break. Got some an announcement with the Zone here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We do that next.